maybe the tooling we need around this is the tooling that stops people from being fucking idiots.
Welcome to A/B Testing Podcast, your modern testing podcast. Your hosts, Alan and Brent, will be here to guide you through topics on testing, leadership, agile, and anything else that comes to mind. Now, on with the show.
We're back for another A/B Testing. It's just me, Alan.
Wait, what? Just you?
Sorry, Alan. Sorry, try that again. It's me, Alan.
And me, Brent.
And we're here together. Nobody, no guests, nobody else. My dog is asleep on the floor over there.
Yeah, my cat, empty.
Your cat's empty? Yeah. What?
No, so...
I get it.
Did I mention?
I get it.
Okay.
The cat bed. No cat.
Did I already show you? I did. Last episode.
Yeah, yeah.
This cat has been fantastic. She no longer tries to jump on my keyboard. She's just happy being within arm's reach.
I am getting over a cold. I am going to edit out all of the coughing that I may do. But I'm hoping that for the listeners, it gives my voice a texture that will draw you in to the important things I have to talk about. Or not. Or fast forward. I already sound higher pitched than I do normally because you are listening to this at 1.5 speed.
I'm doing swell. I'm eager for the weekend. Within minutes of this podcast being done, my daughter and I, despite the damn liquid sunshine today, we're going to go out geocaching. And we are,
oh, cool.
We are both excited about it.
I did that with my kids a long time ago. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of going out, have you seen Dune, the new Dune?
Dune 2, no.
Dune 2. You got to go see Dune 2 in IMAX.
I have not seen Dune 1 yet.
So much better than the Dune we grew up with.
Yeah. That probably won't take much.
I am going to play Xbox this weekend for the first time literally in months. I got to tell you about my struggle with Starfield.
Okay.
Is I am in a place now where I do not have enough health nor ammo to get out alive of this building I'm in that I have to kind of walk my way out of. So I think I'm going to have to go back to a save point well before the building. Just kind of start a whole big quest over because there's just no way out. I have scoured the building and all I find are more bad guys and no ammo. And it's been kind of frustrating. I think if I'm a game designer, I would not put myself in that but put my players in that position. So I'm going to give it a shot again. It's been long enough now that if I have to go do the whole quest again, I won't be mad because I've forgotten most of it, but it's kind of not a great experience. So I'm going to go fix that.
I in Starfield got myself into that situation. I refused to do what you did. And I just, you know, died, reload.
And I have already done that 300 times.
And I did it enough to manage to squeak through.
Okay, I will probably try it another 50 times before I give up, just for the record. But I don't feel confident.
I am now roughly, I haven't played it in a couple of months. I think around level 35. The last time I checked in, I was already.
I'm at 12.
I think I was around 7. But my birthday was last week, and my...
Oh, happy birthday, Brent. Brent's 25 now.
25, going on 12. And my eldest gave me Baldur's Gate.
Oh, I've been playing that too. That's a fun game too.
And...
That's the... I play three games on my Xbox. I play Starfield, Baldur's Gate, and FIFA.
Okay. I felt I was... I only am doing two. Matter of fact, I think I told you I went out and bought a whole new Xbox just to be able to play Starfield. And currently, that Xbox has exactly two games installed upon it.
I picked up an X, I think, last summer. It has my whole library on it because why not? I don't have my other one plugged in anywhere. I thought about plugging one of them. I have so many of them now. Anyway, lots of Xboxes. I'm going to do that this weekend. Oh, I want to talk about how forgetful I am.
Okay.
So I had an idea for a podcast topic, and Brent has a better one, thankfully. But longtime listeners will know that I often vet articles or presentations on the podcast, just talking about something that I'm thinking about for a presentation, but kind of work through it. I'm giving a presentation at another company in May, which is coming rather quickly. And it's a company that invited me up to give them a talk pre-pandemic. I was supposed to give the talk in April or May of 2020. Bad time to travel around the world. I'm finally going to go back and give some talks. And I was going to talk through them, but I heard back from them today asking me for some information about my talk and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And I realized I do not have a copy of the abstract I sent them anywhere. I don't know exactly what my talk is about. So I'm not going to vet that here on the podcast because I'm frankly old and dumb.
Well, it feels like a good hour or two on the podcast, you and I could just ChatGPT it out.
Yeah. Oh, and we're going to get to ChatGPT in a minute. But speaking of old and dumb, this is episode 197 of the AB Testing Podcast.
197.
So we are coming up on not only the 200th episode,
but more,
we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the very first AB Testing Podcast. Do not listen to it. Now, I have been thinking hard about how we get to 200 to be released on that day. And what it means is we got to get 197, 198, and 199 out quickly.
I think we decided this is 197, right?
This is 197, okay. Yeah. And I'm Alan, and that's Brent, and this has been episode 197 of the AB Testing Podcast.
All right. Okay. See?
Now let's do 198.
Okay.
Hey. We're going to figure it out. I don't know. I got time. Let me know if you want to do
something. We could release episode one as a recap.
Oh,
we could do
no.
We could do episode one with like director commentary.
Oh,
for 198. Okay, and by the way, like who invented this rule that episode 200 has to be done after 198 and 199?
Right.
Right, we could just
skip some. You're right.
No. We can.
I like the idea of MST3King our first episode.
That actually would be fun. I haven't listened to it in a long time.
I gotta figure out. I am pretty sure I can figure out how to just pipe that in to us, and we can listen and pause as we go along. That would be fun.
Let's do that. Let's figure out how to make that 199.
Okay.
Actually,
we'll do that.
We
get your calendar out. Figure out how we're going to shove those in. I will make it work. If you want to just pick a night, I've got nothing going on. Let me know. So listeners don't know that Brent and I, we don't talk in between. We don't plan. We don't have
we got things to do, y'all.
Yeah. We should get an assistant producer that would figure all this out. Just tell us what to do.
Okay.
We don't pay.
I think we can make this happen.
All right.
The hard part will be we will have to do episode 200 morning our time if we want to do it on that day.
Okay. We should, you know what? Because that one I probably won't edit, so we could. If we're going to do it live with guests, I probably won't edit it.
I'm going to talk to Alan about this outside of the cast, so...
All right. And if you all want to offer input, one of the three.slack.com is our Slack channel. But the way, if you're not already there, you can go to moderntesting.org and click the link and joiny and get in there. And we're going to do our best to make it all happen. And we want lots of guests. We're going to have for episode 200, whenever that is, we're going to have people join. And there's going to be a chat gallery. We can have people just I'll figure it out. We can have lots of people on. It's going to be a big party without all the fear of COVID and that stuff.
And all right, we're back.
We have done some planning, some gnashing of teeth and fingers and things, and we're going to do the best to make it work, but we have more to figure out, but our assistant will step in and help out there. And let's talk about something. Brent, you had an idea for a topic, and it was 5 minutes ago, so I forgot what it was. So
go ahead. Alan, you and I have...
And stop sharing your screen.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to try pushing the stop button and see what happens. It worked. Okay, great.
Yeah, it didn't kill the recording. We're good.
Yeah, I'm like, why is it called stop? It should be called unshare. What's going to happen if I push this button? Whitaker recently wrote a post. Alan, if he remembers, will link to it. And it is called The Resurrection of Software Testing. And I thought it might be fun for us to review slash comment on it.
Wait, is this the same James Whitaker who said test is dead?
He did. He's claiming, he's giving credit to his colleague at the time, Alberto. But I heard it for the first time from him.
Yeah, and... a lot of people misinterpreted this. Merritt had a great post this week that I mentioned in Five for Friday, talks about people who reference things in their talk that they have not fact-checked or done the full research on. So test conferences, in my experience, are famous for this. People telling stories about things that are half true. And a lot of the stories about test is dead missed the point. A lot of the test is dead about the same things Brent and I have been talking about, because you know, data is there to help us. Testing as it's been known, this is, I think it was 10 years ago, right? 15 years ago, 14 in 2011. So 13 years ago, first gave the test is dead talk, stuff was changing. So it was a fair talk to give. I think a lot of people lose a lot of the context or haven't looked into why. And again, as we talked about with Kat a few episodes ago, it is surprising to me how many testers who tout themselves on critical thinking fail to apply critical thinking when evaluating things they don't agree with. But anyway, so that all happened. There was some reaction, a lot of it misconstrued. And then James, who is trying to remain relevant in the world, sorry, James, comes out with an article called The Resurrection of Software Testing, where he says, you know what? Maybe it's not quite so dead.
The ending of it is software testing may well have died in 2011, but its mindset needs to be resurrected in 2024. The world needs the skills of testers more than ever, and researchers need to step up to create similar tools, processes, and training they did for software so long ago.
And what's interesting, now we're going to actually spend a half hour talking about this post, but it's not a very long post, and the first three quarters of it, all they do is recap Albert's test is dead talk. And then he says, oh, AI, and then gives Brent's paragraph. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. No, I think there's some truth to what James is saying, because AI is changing the way software development can work. A lot of people think of AI as magic.
Yeah.
A lot of people blindly use the suggestions from AI without reading them. Remember my prediction show I talked about, as I mentioned it since then, at least twice, the ability to read code critically is going to become very important, because you have to figure out what's actually happening with this generated code. And if that's – and maybe that's a tester mindset. In a sense, like Brent's making a face like he's about to go to town on this one paragraph article.
No, but go for it. No, you just said the way you said the tester mindset triggered negative thoughts from old podcasts.
I get it.
Right. And when I read this, that didn't trigger. So you bring in loading that into the brain at the same time. I'm like, oh, I'm going to puke a little now. And I, as an aside, I'm like, hey, do you have Arvin's phone number on speed dial? Like, maybe we should pause and call him into this right now, because I think this would be a topic of interest to him.
I'll go grab him. He's living in my basement.
Oh,
second
living. He did something very hand wavy, like James.
It's super hand wavy. It's canonical Whitaker.
James, like, he's the master at what's a nice way of saying authoring clickbait titles?
Rhetoric?
No, like the resurrection of software testing. Like,
oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to be clear, we both love James. Yeah. He's a great friend. He's a funny guy. And it's obvious to me what he's doing here. But he's actually in his – and he will tell you that he is not being, you know, facetious or clickbaity. He really means it. But on the other – and he's actually correct. I want to go into why he's correct. But there's not enough there to actually get a full opinion. I think – and I hope there's more coming. I thought it was funny. James posted, like, this is right from 3 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, he posted, any testers on the east side want to get together and chat? And of course, he's going to invite them to his bar where they can buy his beer.
Right.
But he said, get together. And I just replied, hey, dude, test is dead.
Did you?
I did. That's, I did. That's funny. And he replied, I'm talking about testers, not test. Words are important. So.
Yeah. Well, no, it's interesting because I think we would argue that tester is more dead than test.
Yeah, I would.
I'm not going to write the article with that headline, but I'm like, you know, because I read this line, the world needs the skills of testers more than ever. So he says the resurrection of software testing, and I don't know. I don't think he's – what evokes for me is – bringing back, right, the singular discipline, bringing back.
I hope not.
And
I want to talk about what my interpretation of that is and just kind of riff on that for a second. But I do want to bring up a tangent. Oh, no, a tangent, never.
Tangent.
I happen to be – we need a theme song for tangents, except for I run out of copyright money. I was talking to a internet colleague today. Just talking about job searches and giving some generic advice, knowing nothing about the person, but super nice guy. I think he'll do well. I think none of that's important. If you're listening and we talk today, Friday, I actually really think you're going to do well. But the thing we talked about is something I've noticed because I do a lot of free consulting, not as an employee of my company, just because people say, hey, do you got 10 minutes or 15 minutes to talk about a thing? And I say, as long as you're not trying to sell me something, I'd be happy to talk to you. The industry has been very nice to me. The best thing I can do is talk to folks who ask for it. So what I've noticed, and I told him this, what I've noticed in having these conversations over the past few months is actually the bubble is moving. The bubble is moving on what testing is doing. We'll even put our conversation with Brian Finster from the podcast into this bucket. People are beginning to see that testers on good teams, when they exist to help developers do their job better. And that can be coaching or frameworks and things. They're not there to do the vast majority of testing. They may do a little bit of testing because they're really good at it, but they're doing it in a way that makes people around them better. And I want to come back to that, put a pin in that for a conversation on AI. And I also talked to a company, a test leader at a large company. Brent wrote a tangent song in ChatGPT. This is great. I talked to a manager at a large company who has a test team, and my little alarm bells went off. Oh, you have a QA team. I calls them a QA team. And I said, what do they do? And what he described what they do. I won't use the words, but basically they accelerate the achievement of shippable quality. They exist to help with feedback loops.
Okay.
Help with the testing part of feedback loops. They can go faster. There was a few cases where they did a little bit more than I thought they would, but they are actively working on removing that from what they do.
Okay.
So this is a large company who's probably had testers for 20, 30 years. I am seeing the changes happening. I think these changes apply to AI. We do not need dedicated AI testers testing AI. Now, it's funny because Arben said you and I would – one or both of us would both be in QA roles by the end of the year. But I have not been interested at all in any of these folks' jobs or positions. What I'm interested in learning kind of their journey so I can try and get stuff to stick in my head. I think we need people – like, and go back to the AI problem. Mm-hmm. It is a parrot, as we discussed. It is not magic. I watch self-proclaimed test experts use ChatGPT for things or test ChatGPT on things that an LLM and generative AI would never be able to do. And they point their fingers and say, you can't trust this stuff. It's broken. It doesn't work. We need people. We need critical thinkers who understand how this stuff works so they can, one, stop those people in their tracks. So when somebody wants to use generative AI to manage their nuclear power plant, that someone steps in and says, that's not a great application. Here are the right things that this is good for. That's kind of what's been missing. We can go into the whole ethics and AI thing. We don't necessarily need AI tested. We need people who really understand how it works to explain to the rest of us. One last thing I'm going to get off my soapbox, because I went to a talk from someone virtually, of course. I don't leave my house because when I do, I get sick. I went to a talk virtually from someone giving a talk on AI or LLMs or both. People don't get the difference. And yet neither did this person. They were on one hand ranting about how much they knew and how deep their talk was. And while I was watching, thinking, oh my God, this is all wrong. So what's really missing from the industry today, to sum up my TED talk, what's really missing from the industry today is people who understand how LLMs work, explaining and handholding the people who are using them so they use it in the way that's most effective and they don't use it for the things that it's not designed for and complaining.
You're not going to get me to disagree with that. I'm more curious around like the synopsis of the one talk that you talked about. Like, what was a key thing that this person was wrong on?
I probably have notes somewhere. I can look it up. They were actually wrong in a couple things, partially right, but also in some places very wrong.
So high level that it didn't matter?
And the low level stuff, but no, it went deep because the speaker was very adamant about saying how deep they went, but the stuff they went on deep on, it was obvious they did not understand.
Okay.
They had no idea what a RAG model was, but they talked about it like they did, but then they described it was obvious they did not know what it was, for example. Anyway, I'm not here to throw internet people under the bus.
No, you actually.
What I'm here to do is say this is an example of where we need. I don't even want to call it testing. It's an example of where we need critical thinking applied to how AI is used. Brent's showing me a paper on his desk about how to filter content for retrieval augmented.
Yeah, I literally just printed it out and just pulled it out of my paper, out of my printer. The issue that we're battling is the same thing we've been battling for a long time.
Ignorance?
The intellectually lazy is what I'm going to call them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
I don't know how we fix that. Like, honestly, LLM, quite honestly, is probably going the other direction.
Correct.
Right? It's like, oh, we need a jingle. We need a little theme song for when we go to the start up the tangent segment. Oh, ChatGPT, blah, 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 blah. Hey, it rhymes. Cool. Let me show it to Alan. Right? I spent no time reading it. Most of my time going, what's the prompt? Right? That's the other thing. At work, I play the role that you just talked through.
Oh. Maybe you're going to be a AI QA.
No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, because number one, that would make Arben correct, and I refuse to let that happen. I, on a daily basis, I have had random ICs come to me, and they're like, hey, I have this awesome idea for how to use LLM. Great. Sit down. Walk me through it. And they're like, oh, yes, perfect, except for, you know, the parts where I actually use LLM, it keeps coming back with weird stuff. And then I sit down and I tell them how to use the system. With the endeavors that you do, you actually do it nearly optimal for what it excels at, right? If it's something that's a creative endeavor... Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to knock things out. Like, just as an example, today I have My team has a Python package that we have built on top of LLM to make our lives easier on a lot of aspects. And one of my ICs had created a unit test that had dependencies. And I don't like unit tests having dependencies.
Nor should you.
So I de-dependencized it. And I had some sample content that I use in other things where it's quotes from Yoda and quotes from Mark Twain. And I just said, hey, create three new quotes from a fictitious author that simultaneously speaks like Twain and like Yoda, and then write a story that includes those quotes.
I bet it did all right.
It did fantastic. Like the quotes were like, yeah, that's literally Mark Twain and Yoda. The story was a little chintzy because it invented a story about a little girl that lived in a village, and she found the quote book, and she opened the first page and read the first quote. And
are they cheated?
Yeah, I'm like, okay, well, you did what I asked for, but that's a boring story.
That's what they do. That's what they do. But right. Some tester, now here's the difference. Some tester will ask you to write that story, but write exactly 5 paragraphs, and each paragraph should have 27 words. And it's not going to be able to do that. It doesn't get that. It's not going to do that. And they're going to say it's broken. We need people because they don't understand how LLMs and Gen AI work.
Right.
So what I'm saying we need in testing is, and you like I said, LLMs, they are here for now, gone for later. We're going to have something else, something different with AGIs or whatever. Now, each different thing that we call AI, and even Gen AI is it really AI? Is it really intelligent? Maybe not, right?
Absolutely not.
So what we need for every single iteration of AI, I was giving our listeners the benefit of the doubt to jump in there, yeah. But we need somebody who understands how it works to help figure out how it should be used. What we've lost with ChatGPT is nobody ever did that. They just, here's the thing, you could ask these questions. And then 90% of the people use it in a way it wasn't designed and are frustrated with it. I don't understand because it's not hard to go figure out. It's intellectual laziness, as you've called it. And it's going to happen because the speed of innovation in this area is going to crank like hell. And people are not going to be able to keep up if they do not take some time to learn how these things work before deciding they know how they work.
There is a couple of things. When I think about this, like as you and I talked about, James wrote this very hand wavy, in my view, your view as well, and he left it with the final paragraph. And we both know him well enough; he did this on purpose. He left it.
We do,
yeah.
And what he's going to do is, we know James, and actually, I like the way James does research. He's going to pull people in on this. They're going to give him a bunch of feedback. He's going to get a bunch of ideas, and then he's going to con one of them into writing a book with his name on it.
Yeah.
And you'll get to write the foreword.
Right. You know, he's got an equation that works, and I'm not going to fault him for it. I just, quite honestly.
No, me neither. Me neither. Yeah. I nothing but respect, because he does know his shit, and he knows what he's doing. 100%, unlike some other folks in the industry who just whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
Unicorns and rainbows. Unicorns and rainbows.
He says the skills of testers. Okay. I'm not certain what the skills of testers he's talking about here.
What are skills of testers, Brent?
I guess it would be in this, like, the ones I would say are the ability to critically understand what's going on. It's not find bugs. Okay, connect the dots between the customer's needs and the product. I definitely, there was a day decades ago where I would have cited, oh, it's matching to the requirement spec. I'm long past that. It's around connecting to the needs of the customer to this. Now, I will tell you, one really big, I was in a very high level LLM meeting within my company just yesterday. Not yesterday, Tuesday, whatever, this week. I raised the question, hey, has anyone found a way to quantify the number of times a particular qualities situation that occurs in LLM has occurred? And like, no, but if you find something, I need it. And then it went down the line. Every data science, no, if you find something, I need it. The biggest challenge, are you familiar with the book, what is it, Systematics?
No.
Okay. It's like one of the primers on systems theory. Okay. And in there, he has something he calls the law of systematics. And that law is the number of problems in the universe is constant.
Right. And you've mentioned this before. I forgot or didn't know what book it was from. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so the problem with LLM, when you're trying to do it in a non-creative space, you have to figure out, okay, what does it do well? I'll tell you, it does conformance well. Like, let's say you have five different help docs written by different people. And there's a format, a language choices that you like from on one.
Yeah.
You just say, hey, take this style, rewrite these ones. It'll do that just fine.
Well, actually, that's a – again, it goes back to my – I think we need AI guides. What's a fancy word for a guide?
Guide?
Okay. Well, a docent. We need an AI docent to kind of walk organizations through how to use it, because time and time again, organizations think that AI is magic and people go, oh, this is a really hard problem. Let's use magic to solve it. And someone needs to say, not only stop them, but actually look at the org and say, here are some areas where we really could use AI and make sure it's happening. Someone who understands, you know, some companies may call it an AI architect. That's the wrong word too. But somebody, it would be more effective if someone made it work correctly. I want to go back to James' article.
I want to go back to that because I don't actually I think the principles of testing that we have been talking about, that testers need to serve as a guide, is the way to do it. It's not
AI coach.
It's an AI.
There's the word.
It's an AI.
That's what I'm looking for. AI coach.
An LLM coach. Like someone who can pass on and spread like seeds to the wind what works, what doesn't work.
I was going to say, I fully agree. And when James says, while testing may well have died in 2011, it's the mindset needs to be resurrected in 2024. Testing may well have died in 2011. We need a different kind of person to be doing evaluation, coaching, testing on AI in 2024 and beyond.
Here's the thing. And actually, this is one of the things with this statement that I will abjectly, like if he were here, I would look him in the eyes and say, James, this is bullshit. Because while software testing may have died in 2011, the mindset that was necessary to build software did not, still exists, and is thriving. It's just now we spent the last 13 years getting devs to understand it better. Mm-hmm. Right? It's to me, I'm like, no. I don't think this – I wish I could disentangle what skills the testers. When he says researchers need to step up and create similar tools and process and training, that part I probably agree with, and I think we're probably talking about that. I don't know if it's researchers, but it's not only the guides, like you talk about the docent or like
coach.
What this should say is people like me who do understand a lot of things about this, and by no means do I understand more than the common people, and I understand that there's a lot more people who understand way more than me. What the world needs is a set of, in this space, a set of tools that make the sticky, harder problem clearer, make it avoidable. Like, don't
you know what? Here's a tool. It's a front end that sits on top of ChatGPT and does some NLP on your input prompt to let you, to give you a score on the shittiness, I'm sorry, the quality of your prompt. Like, I could write this. I could figure out if this is a question that I think ChatGPT will answer really well, or answer like you're asking it something stupid that you'll never get a good answer on. You and I use critical thinking to figure that out, but I can quantify that.
How? How would you quantify it?
I'm going to use a language model that looks there. So I know what ChatGPT is good at. It's good at parroting text and finding similarities in the style of somebody, all those things.
But that's a,
it's not.
But all those things is a big.
No, I want to flag the things I know it's bad at. So maybe I'm just going to do it simply from a keyword input file of things like similar. It's going to look for words like count or rhyme or any of the multiplication symbols or all of the things I know it's bad at. And I know it's probably a quantifiable list. And use those to help. Maybe it's harder than I think it is, but it's possible.
It is absolutely harder than you think it is.
It's just software.
But here's one of the things, and I don't know if you've ever done this. I told you I've been talking to employees just about every day for the last 2 weeks. Okay? One of them is actually a rock star who reports to me. But he's still kind of unfamiliar with LLM. He's familiar with neural net. So the other day I was walking him through and I generated a prompt and it gave me an answer. And literally what I was asking it to do is I asked it to write code. And I said, I want a comment that describes the purpose of this code after the curly brace. Okay. It kept on putting it before the curly brace. And I wanted it after. So then I chided it. And I said, no, you put the comment before. I want it after. And then it says, oh, okay. And then it fixes it. Then I went back and I did the thing that blew my employee's mind. And I said, okay, now tell me how I should have prompted you such that you had gotten it right the first time. I just asked it. Tell me what the prompt should have been such that you wouldn't have made this mistake. Now, oftentimes it gives you advice that's wrong, but seven times out of 10, it works.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a way to use ChatGPT to maybe, because you can modify the prompt.
Yeah.
Not in the commercial, but if you use like OpenAI, maybe you can work that into the prompt. Like you can actually, if you've worked on the back end of it, you know that you can change the prompt to make sure it does not give it does not ChatGPT as it exists on the web for most people. It will always give you an answer even if it doesn't know. So it could be confidently wrong.
Right.
But you can prompt it to not do that. If you don't know, tell it you don't know.
No, but that's changing the answer. That you're exactly right though, right? It's essentially. So you talked about it's a parrot, and I'm glad that that
So I wonder if, because I haven't played with this, what I want to know is, can I use that same prompt? Can I use some prompt engineering on the sort of in the middle layer, like you can do with, you know, if like Azure OpenAI? Can I muck with the prompt there, give it additional prompts that would have it grade, like rather than confidently give an answer to some math that it can't do, if it could reply back and say, this isn't something I'm good at. Or I don't have my confidence level on my answer. I don't know.
No, it's so in my mind.
But these are the research tools I want these fancy researchers Whitaker speaks of to write.
Yeah, that one would be a difficult one to do because.
And I love difficult because.
Oh, it's fine. But the thing is, LLM.
I know
all it is, and I know you know this, but I'm going to remind everyone in the audience, right? All it does is it given a string of text, it produces the next character.
Right.
And then given that new string of text, what's the next character? Repeat until bored. Okay.
But I realized what I'm doing is something I get mad at companies for doing all the time. Remember when one of the iPhones, like the 7 or something, it didn't work. And Steve Jobs said it's because you're holding it wrong, because the antenna was in a weird place.
Right, I remember that.
So in a way, I am telling people they're holding their phone wrong. People are using ChatGPT. They're getting answers they don't like. It's broken. And here I am saying it's because you're holding your phone wrong. You're doing it wrong. So what I want the tool to do if you're doing it wrong is to tell you you're doing it wrong, because maybe that's easier than have every company having an AI coach to help them from stop being stupid. Maybe the tooling we need around this is the tooling that stops people from being fucking idiots.
GPT, and now we're aboard. I just want to be super clear. GPT will never, ever, 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 ever do what you just want. However, that doesn't mean – that just means no one should be using GPT directly. It should be going through a different endpoint that does exactly what you're talking about.
GPT is just a front end on top of a really big LLM.
Yes. Exactly. Aboard. Happiness. But I look at this and I'm like, yeah, to me, it's the same thing. If you are building software or a solution that relies on LLM, then the developers of it, they need to be thinking about what is the quality of this solution? How well will it solve the problems? It'd be interesting to bring Nicole Forsgren on and say, hey, did the principles of your thing, do you have any opinion? To me, it seems like the very same principles that you're talking about for code would also apply to prompt engineering. I know you may or may not have studied that, but what's your intuition? I'd love to hear her answer to that. Because I'm just
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So we've been doing a little book club on Accelerate at work.
Oh, have you?
And we just did chapter 3 and 4 today. And 3 is the one on culture. And talk about Wistrom's model, which is super cool. I wonder if, and we can both talk about this from a Microsoft. I wonder if the advent of ChatGPT is re-encouraging the hero mindset. Because somebody wants to go solve everyone's problem with the magic of GPT.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that, but there is something very relevant that I have seen in that timeline. Okay, and that is the proactive claim of duplication of effort in order to make sure everyone is aware that I have licked the cookie. This is mine, right? The Alan. I'm concerned that you're duplicating my team's effort, right? That's just a political ploy.
Oh, sure.
Particularly, like, I've been getting it a lot lately because I run a data science team that specializes in the NLP. And the other team that, quote-unquote, is competing with me is a dev team, right? From a knowledge point of view, they're not going to beat my team. The only way they win is from if it turns into an API problem, which... Right, GPT is an API, but it's the quality output of it that matters.
So here's my thought. So, you know, remember back in the day I worked with folks on the Microsoft research team on a lot of software engineering studies. But here's the study I want to see. It's almost too early to do it, and it's way too hard for me to do. But I want to find something around the effect of generative AI on organizational culture or organizational health. Either one of those. I'll call it organizational health. Like, how is chat? We talk a lot, because we're adjacent to it, about ChatGPT helping programmers and helping make software. As you know, when we've discussed, ChatGPT and generative AI isn't just for developers. It has some pretty good pluses for us. And I talk about how I use it in writing and thinking through things. But what is, that's the thing, AI is for everyone. Gen AI is for everyone. What is the effect of that? What is happening to organizations who embrace Gen AI, who play with Gen AI? Like, what is happening there? Are they getting healthier? Are they getting less healthy? There can't be no impact.
Oh, there's going to be impact.
But I actually don't have an opinion on what that's going to be. But it's worth measuring.
I'll give you some thoughts.
I have enough thoughts already. Okay, I'm out of room.
Here's a few more.
Oh, okay. Right. I'll squeeze them in.
Number one. remember what I just said about systematics, okay?
Yes.
The key thing is that the number of problems in the universe is constant, okay? And when I talk about this law, I talk about, like, okay, when email happened, right? When
I remember.
When email was invented, why was it cool?
Because we could talk to our friends anywhere in the world.
And not have to pay for stamps and not have to wait.
For free.
Right.
And as long as we paid our computer lab fee.
And then what problem was constructed because we created email?
A couple problems.
Okay.
One big one is you couldn't infer tone or anything from the email.
Mm-hmm.
We also created spam emails. We also created, and again, maybe it goes with the first one, we created internet anonymity where you could be a dick to someone because you're more likely to be a dick to someone because you had never met them and you'd never relationship with them. You're talking to people you don't know as much now over email because it's free.
Right. And actually even more, and some may view this as a positive or negative, but even if you just talk of, you know, limit it to friends and family, right? What did you do? You increase the friction or decrease the friction for, you know, grandma to send you, you know, the chain letter that will save it. Even allies will send you crap now, right? My uncle, I have an uncle that every time his PC dies, right? And you've encountered this, I'm sure, right? Oh, Carl Brandt, he works for Microsoft. He can be your...
Oh, God, yes.
Yep. Well, before email, there's no way he would ever have, like, sent me a letter asking me for that, right? The automation reduces friction. It doesn't just reduce friction on the bad things. It reduces friction. So the good things become a lot easier to do, but the bad things do too. Like junk mail, spam, the ability at scale for the Nigerian prince to ask you for help, right?
Yep.
The same thing's going to happen here. And the intellectual lazy are going to get caught by it.
They're going to get creamed.
One of the issues is, okay, so AI can at scale review, let's say, bug reports, right? AI can at scale review it. But now you have to review what it reviewed, right? How do you know, because you know enough that it's a generative AI, how do you know it's doing the right thing? And here's the
Well, isn't that similar to who tests the tests?
Yeah. Except when it's who tests the tests, in the past, it's been a human being. You can kind of go, all right, well, karma will eventually hit the tester who wrote a billion bogus test cases, right? Yeah,
no, I get what you're saying.
AI is...
Skynet happens when we begin trusting the AI for everything.
Well, yeah, and if we are about to get even more flooded with AI-generated content, right, it's that flood that's going to lead to trust. Because I just don't have the time to read it otherwise.
100 million percent.
Yep.
All right. We should cut it there.
Yep.
That was actually a fun conversation. I got a little bit more passionate about it than I thought I would. So super exciting. Thank you, James Whitaker, for your contributions today. Episode, yeah. What was it, 197?
197.
All right. We'll see you next time. I'm Alan.
I'm Brent.
Au revoir.
Auf Wiedersehen.